Michelle Pfeiffer.
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Well, Mr. Pfeiffer.
He's coming.
Hear me, future dweller. What is the year?
1972.
1972. My beloved Colin, what?
The Collins family.
Who the hell is this?
I'm a vampire, madam.
Yeah.
He's not staying with us forever, is he?
I like him.
Oh, super fat.
Welcome home, Barnabas Collins.
How soon can the horses be ready?
We don't have horses. We have a Chevy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Pfeiffer Fridays, where we walk you through the films of one Michelle Pfeiffer, and every F word automatically has a silent P. I'm Michael McLean.
And I'm Jerry Downey.
And today we are covering 2012's Dark Shadows, starring Johnny Depp, Ava Green, Helena Bonham Carter, Jackie Earle Haley, Johnny Lee Miller, Bella Heathcote. I just mean, there's so many people with three names in this cast.
They're
Chloe Grace Moretz, Alice Cooper in a little cameo appearance, and La Pfeiffer as Elizabeth Collins Stoddard. Jerry, have you ever seen this before?
Yeah.
I'm still thinking about that. That I was like, oh, everybody has three names in this movie, everybody in this cast.
I have. Yeah, I saw this back in 2012, but not in theaters.
Okay.
I remember redboxing this.
Ooh.
Movie. Just one of those like weekend rentals, getting in an extra 2012 watch before the Oscars ceremony. Not that this was nominated for any Oscars, but you know, we were watching all the 2012 releases.
Yeah, you never know.
Yeah, it's a Tim Burton movie, you know, random design nomination thrown somewhere.
Oh yeah.
Who knows?
Oh yeah.
But yeah, I have only seen it that once. I have not rewatched it until now. So this was interesting to revisit because I had very specific memories, and I enjoyed it more this time around. I'll be honest. I did.
Okay.
Now I can't remember. Was this your first time for this one?
Yeah, first time. I was just looking at the release date, May 11th, 2012. So that would have been, yeah, like right around finishing up my freshman year of college. Why did I not see this then? Anyway, but yeah, no, never saw it until today when I watched it.
Thoughts, feelings, sassy comments.
You know, it was something to watch at work to make the time go by.
Am I to assume that you were not a fan of Tim Burton's Dark Shadows?
I was not a fan of Tim Burton's Dark Shadows. It's interesting. I have not been a fan of a lot of his stuff post Sweeney Todd.
See, this is why we're friends. That's my cutoff point too.
I mean, maybe Big Eyes for Amy Adams, but that's, you know, it's not a high point, but you know, maybe that's the one that's when I was going to be looking forward to out of his most recent output.
See, I didn't even care for Amy Adams, and I thought Big Eyes was a fucking snooze.
Okay.
Just did not like that movie.
Your big eyes were closed.
My big eyes were rolling. I meant to look at his filmography past that point we're talking about to see if there were ones that I was even just kind of like,
I don't know if you'll find one.
Not really. I mean, I think I was more okay with Miss Peregrine and Dumbo than others were. I didn't find them nearly as offensively bad as something like Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, like, no, I have not seen Miss Peregrine. I have not watched that one, but Alice was definitely like a bit of a skid down. It was definitely a valley, and things have been kind of getting a little bit better.
Yeah, Alice in Wonderland is garbage. It is the severest low point for Tim Burton, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And honestly, I remember Dark Shadows being awful.
Okay.
And maybe that's why I enjoyed it more this time around, was because, as I said, my memories of it were so piss poor. that I was just like, oh dear Jesus, let's just get through this.
Mm-hmm.
But I found more to enjoy about it. But it's,
yes,
there are very specific things I enjoy, and the fact that they are not the leads, if you will,
mm-hmm.
are the reason why this movie is still kind of like a middle of the road to below average for me, but not as terrible as I remembered it being.
Yeah. And as much as I'm with you there, where there are things that I definitely enjoyed about it that are yeah, maybe not the what we should be focusing on in this movie. And I thought it was going to be pretty interminable to watch. I thought it was maybe going to be like an Alice in Wonderland level of like bracing yourself. But it is, I'd say about the first three quarters of the movie is watchable.
Yeah, I would agree. It loses steam, but the high point of this movie for me, and seriously, the only thing that I remember liking about it on my first watch, is Eva Green. And oh my God, she is divine in this movie. She is one of those that understands this assignment. And for some reason, she gets some of the best dialogue to deliver,
mm-hmm.
and she just bites into it.
And literally.
Yes. And is just like, you know what? I've got a great role and I'm going to serve it to you. And yes. she does. Yeah. And that's the reason why I, even those sort of, like you said, that last quarter I still enjoy is
because of
her.
Yeah. We can talk about it though. Yes. We can. I want to try a plot synopsis of this.
I would like you to say that with a little more determination, if you please.
I would like to try a plot synopsis of this, Jerry, if I may.
Good. I want to hear you try.
Okay. So Dark Shadows, it's based on a TV show from the 60s, right?
Yes.
About this Collins family.
Gothic soap opera.
Was it around the same time as, you know, like the Addams Family, the Munsters? Was it around the same time, do you know?
I believe a little later,
okay.
But
it was kind of generally. In kind of the swell that we had of these sitcoms, kind of.
Because I'm forgetting how long Dark Shadows lasted, but the movie essentially, the modern day part of the movie essentially picks up where the series ended.
Okay.
So like the series ended 1971-ish and the movie is taking place in 72.
Okay. So yeah, so we have this prologue in the beginning of the movie where we are introduced to the Collins family, and they were this prominent family in England, but they move overseas to stake their claim in America. And so they start a fishing empire in Maine, and they name it, because their name is Collins, they call it Collins Port. They eventually have Collinswood Manor. They become a huge thing in this town in Maine. Their son Barnabas grows up and he's quite the playboy, quite the catch around town. And he makes the big old mistake of falling in love with Angelique Bouchard. I believe she's a maid in their family. She's a maid. And they fall in love. He rejects her. And because of that, because she is a witch, you know, she's a witch. And so she, there's not really much explanation to how this happens, but she's a witch. And so she casts a spell on Barnabas and turns him into a vampire for breaking her heart and buries him alive. Years later, we're in 1972. The Collins family is still alive and not so well. They're definitely hanging on by a thread. The fishing business is donezo, pretty much. And there is an ad for a governess. It's very haunting of Bly Manor. I was like, oh, are we in Bly Manor? Like, is this...
Are we in Turn of the Screw?
Yeah, like, is this about to happen? A woman of dubious origins named Victoria Winters is coming to be the governess for a member of the Collins family. And she's kind of our way into the story to meet this family. We have Elizabeth, played by Michelle Pfeiffer, who is the matriarch of the family right now. She has a daughter named Carolyn, played by Chloe Grace Moretz. Her brother, Roger, who has a troubled son named David, who that's who Victoria Winters is going to be the governess for. We have the groundskeeper, housekeeper, Willie, played by Jackie Earle Haley. And then we have the shrink on staff, Dr. Julia Hoffman, played by Helena Bonham Carter, who has been taking care of David for the past 3 years. Apparently David's mother has gone missing or is rumored to be dead.
Rumored to be drowned.
And yeah, as you know, Victoria is being introduced to this family and figuring out this family dynamic, Barnabas Collins is accidentally unearthed from the grave by a construction crew, and he rises from the dead and descends again upon his beloved Collinswood Manor that has really undergone quite a change in the however many centuries he has been gone. And it's, what does it remind me of? It reminds me of those classic fish out of water stories. That's what it's given, a fish out of water story. And he's just acclimating to being in the 20th century. And not many hijinks ensues, but it's just, it's more of Johnny Depp getting, naming things incorrectly and falling in love with Victoria because she has a very striking resemblance to his love, Josette. Angelique put a spell on her, right? And caused her to jump off a cliff. So yeah, so then that was his true love. And so of course, yeah, now she is like reincarnated. And we can't forget about Angel Bay. We can't forget about Angel Bay because that is the rival cannery company. And that is run by Miss Ava Green, who is Angelique, just still kicking centuries later.
Yeah.
And looking amazing, I'll have you know. I'll have our listeners know. She's really killing it. Once she finds out that Barnabas is alive, she's like, well, either you have an ultimatum. You can either be my undead love for the end of time and we join forces, or I kill you, or I destroy everything, or I destroy your family.
Yeah, basically you go back in the ground and I go right back to doing what I was doing.
And it's basically them just at odds with each other the whole rest of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. That one, and somebody just, the whole Josette thing, I forget about her because it's such a, again, it's one of the very kind of undercooked aspects of the movie that it's hard to like, oh yeah, that's in there too.
And unfortunately, that's not only is that the most boring part of the story, but it features two of the worst performances. So why do we care?
See, I really, we can scratch that whole part together, listeners. Just forget about Josette.
Well, much as I am loving your attempt at the Dark Shadows synopsis, the fact that you're having such a hard time is indicative of the problems of this movie.
Oh, look at Jerry coming to... Thank you.
It's true. You, yeah. And I think that is inherent in adapting a long-running TV show because I sure. just looked. This was six seasons long, so 66 to 71.
Ooh.
And especially a soap opera where... you're not, you know, you have multiple episodes a week, usually on a soap opera, shoved in,
ooh, yeah.
in an hour a day. So you adapting that is almost harder than adapting like an hour-long weekly drama or a sitcom mm-hmm. because you have this in your head that you have to fit all this into one movie. And what's surprising about this adaptation is the fact that based on the ending, it seems like they were really trying to offset a sequel mm-hmm. or this movie to have been a hit. So it's like, if you were already planning on a sequel, why didn't you just choose one strand and make it strong instead of trying to pull in, you know, Helena Bonham Carter tries to turn herself into a vampire, and that's mm-hmm. a thread we have to pay attention to. Victoria sees ghosts, and that's why she gets along so well with David, because he sees ghosts as well. Chloe Grace Moretz
is a werewolf
that we find out in the last 10 minutes, which does nothing to redeem the fact that she's horrible the entire movie, both her performance and the character.
She just wants to dance, Jerry.
Does she? Is that all she wants? It's just, it's very hard to focus. It's unfocused. That's its main problem is there's so little drive behind almost any of the storylines that it's difficult to care.
Yeah, I agree. I think maybe if you would just focus on maybe like in this one, just Angelique and Barnabas, and then maybe save some of the family members for the sequel, or maybe did like one family member that gets roped into the whole thing, and then later on you, for a sequel, you see other family members' stories.
Well, if you keep the Angelique Barnabas storyline, and with that tie-in, keep sort of Barnabas helping the family regain its footing, and like having Michelle Pfeiffer, you know, Elizabeth sort of come back to life, you can still have the Josette thing in there because that also intertwines, but bulk that up and make it stronger and more interesting, and please cast someone that isn't Bella Heathcote to play Josette. You have to take out some of those extraneous things in order to have the story truck, or you have to go outside, or not even outside Tim Burton's comfort zone, but go back to like 90s Tim Burton and up that camp factor a little bit.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing. There's too many things that I feel like should be fun that aren't.
Yeah, like the fish out of water with Barnabas exploring the world. I think the only part that I really laughed at in those moments when he is having a hard time acclimating to the modern world, is his sleeping arrangements.
Yeah.
You know, he sleeps upside down, holding on to the curtain of the four-poster bed in the linen closet. I thought that was kind of, I was hoping that we would get more of that, because that's what I kind of expected the movie to be, well, is that almost, it was going to be a little bit more funny.
Yeah, that sleeping arrangement sequence almost makes him like a vampire version of Austin Powers, and that's why it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had a little bit more like that, but then that also sort of goes against the gothic tone of what you're trying to do. There's just a lot of disagreeing variables going on here.
Yeah, because I think you could have had it both ways if you had really upped it. Because I think Batman Returns really lands that comedy.
Exactly.
But it's also because we're in this really hyped up world.
And I think they would have had full license to go that far.
Yeah.
With this. It feels like a property that would have allowed that, especially going in knowing it's a Tim Burton movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think you already have that heightened sensibility just knowing that his name is attached to it. So I don't know why they couldn't have taken it further.
Another moment where I noticed when it felt like it jarred was the sex scene between Barnabas and Angelique, where they're just going all over the place on that room. And that's kind of funny. It's a very funny concept to me, but you have kind of this horror imagery also in there with, you know, multiple hands coming out of Angelique to kind of caress Barnabas's back, and you're tearing at his clothes. And you also kind of have a score that isn't really, I think there's maybe a song playing underneath that isn't there.
There is a song playing.
But it doesn't really click with what I think maybe they wanted it to be, with what Tim Burton wanted that to be, which was maybe funny, sexy. Instead, it's kind of scary, weird.
Well, I think the reason why this is so disappointing from a tonal or directorial standpoint is because you have really excellent examples in previous works that could have been used toward this. And I'm thinking something like Sleepy Hollow.
Hmm.
Or
mm-hmm.
even something as recent, just two movies previous, Sweeney Todd, that has that dark, gothic, frightening sensibility, especially since they say up front this is taking place in October.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is basically designed to be a pseudo horror Halloween movie, if you will. I just wish they would have chosen a direction and leaned into it because I think that's what stops it from succeeding, and why especially the characters themselves feel like such a mismatch. Like, I know the screenplay traded hands at least two times, which also can lead to some irregularities, but yeah, it just seemed like Tim Burton didn't know which direction he wanted to drive in on this one.
And with the Michelle of it all, it's a disappointment on that front too, because we're so off in different directions with each character, none of them get to have any kind of really major depth or any kind of major arc. I think I maybe got a little sense of something that, you know, Michelle is kind of at the position at the beginning of the movie when she first meets Barnabas and knows that he's a vampire and wants to keep it from the family and keep his identity secret. I also got a sense maybe she's trying to seduce him a little bit to get at the money that's in the basement, because the house and the business is really floundering. It's like maybe she has an ulterior motive here. I got that sense. But then that's kind of dropped. And then Ava Green takes over for the majority of the second half with her arc. And then we're kind of left with Michelle kind of in the background, just like she is at that party that's held in the house. She's kind of there in a fabulous dress and not given much to do.
I did write down that every single thing that Colleen Atwood puts Michelle Pfeiffer in is just 70s fabulous, and she looks great. I feel like with this watch, I was looking more at the parts because I knew that the whole was not satisfying. So I actually did enjoy Michelle while still recognizing that she is given extraordinarily little to do.
Mm-hmm.
I thought some of the faces she pulled were hilarious. She is just glowering and grimacing and snarling at everyone in her path, and some of the faces she makes are just hysterical.
There was one that was just, I think especially like around one of the dining scenes, there was something. I don't think I wrote it down.
I think it's when Barnabas wants to throw a ball and he keeps saying the word balls, balls, balls are this. And Roger finally puts in something like, that's what I've been saying for years. This family could use some balls. And Michelle looks at him like she could just stab him right then and there.
Like I could just kill you. She had some, I wrote down two of some of my lines that I loved was when she's interviewing Victoria for the position of the governor's position. What does she say? The one I loved the most was, do you think the sexes should be equal? Victoria says, heavens no, men would be unmanageable. She's like, good, you'll fit right in here. And then when Barnabas is looking around for a secret passageway and he opens up a secret door, it's filled with macrame creations. And Michelle says, that's where I keep my macrame. Very straightforward. You might as well say, that's where I keep the pots and pans. Like that's where I keep my macrame.
See, and my favorite line of hers was, and Barnabas wants to go to the docks or wherever. He says, where are the horses? She goes, we don't have horses. We have a Chevy. Yes. Just dead. Deadpan.
Yeah.
But I liked her heightened take on this character. It was very...
Is there a little bit of Mid-Atlantic in there? Was she giving like a Mid-Atlantic accent?
I don't even know what accent she was giving in this one, but it just felt very Mrs. Danvers to me.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Just very, I know she's not the housekeeper in this instance, but just the way she walks the staircases and is showing people the house, just you could see her doing that scene over Barnabas's shoulder, just being like, why don't you jump? Sort of
yes.
Thing.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I liked that. I liked her heightened take on this character. It was clear that she knew what she was doing, even though, as we said, they really dropped the bag on giving her anything to do. Basically after the cannery reopens, once she cuts that ribbon in that fabulous little vest ensemble, she gets to shoot Eva Green at the end, but that's about it.
And as much as, you know, I love Give Michelle a Gun, yeah, it is disappointing. Because, I think her best stuff comes in the beginning. But if we have to watch Ava Green for the second half of a movie, I'm not going to complain over here.
Nor I.
Nor you. Did you see her in Penny Dreadful?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. That, we need to be talking about Penny Dreadful more. We need to be talking about Ava Green in that movie, in that TV show more.
We need to be talking about Helen McCrory in that TV show more.
Yes, rest in peace, Helen. But she is really, Ava is really tapped in to this specific type of performance. This, it's not even a, I can't even call her a scream queen. It's not what she's doing. It's just this very, she can just play kind of that gothic character like nobody else can.
And it's because Penny Dreadful is so heavy and so dramatic. It's hilarious to me how funny she is in this role too. Mm-hmm. The balance that this entire movie should have, she's got. Yeah. And that's why she's the best part, is because by some miracle, she has been able to coalesce into this Teflon from the rest of this movie, where she's like, nope, I will be good.
Yes.
I am good in this movie.
No, no, no. Stay over there, Chloe Grace Moretz. I'm good in this.
Yeah.
Did you know that, like, Jennifer Lawrence, like Lindsay Lohan, like some of these young ladies wanted to play Angelique? Ava Green said, no, no, no.
I know this is odd to say. Those ladies are not Tim Burton people. And this is a Tim Burton movie.
Yeah, he's got to have his people. There are people out there. It's why he's worked so much with, you know, Helena. It's why even Michelle, Jackie Earle Haley is a perfect addition to the repertory company. Johnny Depp, because he really requires a specific type of actor who can just key in to whatever he's got going on in his head. There's some directors who are also like that, but Tim Burton more so. You've got to be on that same wavelength. You've got to have that look, I think.
Exactly. I think Tim Burton is one of the few directors that I think of where they have to look a certain way, which, while I absolutely advocate for a different actress than Bella Heathcote, is why she was cast in that role. She looks like she belongs in a Tim Burton movie.
Those eyes, my goodness.
Yeah. But yeah, no, Eva Green just pulling around in that red car and slamming on the door, which is kind of, you know, she's been there. We've seen her in a few scenes, but Jackie Earle Haley throwing the door open and saying, keep your panties on, and her just growling at him, I'll do my best, and sweeping into the room. I'm just like, that's an entrance.
Yes.
That is great.
Yeah, she's just so fabulous in this. It's funny, I didn't think I had much notes about her. I was just kind of basking in her. I was like, no, just give it to me, girl.
She kind of reminded me, not the performance itself, but the just sort of joy she had in this evil character kind of reminded me of why I love Michelle so much in Stardust.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very different characters, very different films, but just watching an actress bite into a villainess like that, just always, I will always love that. It will always be my favorite thing about the movie. And even when everything around her is falling to bits, both literally and figuratively, when she's just listing off the ways she's fucked over this family at the end of the movie, like how she killed David's mother and how she made a werewolf bite Chloe Grace Moretz when she was a baby, just listing off these insane things she's done over the course of her life. And then David tries to confront her and she just says, I think I'll kill you first, orphan. And I was like, ah, but it was so good.
It's so ridiculous. I mean, she must have, I mean, it is ridiculous, but I kept watching. I couldn't take my eyes off her.
Oh, because she's fully batshit at that point. Like her, she's cracking like a porcelain doll.
Yeah.
And she has just lost her mind.
Beautiful effect, by the way.
Yeah.
This beautiful special effects. Yeah. Congratulations to the FX person. I hope your paycheck was plentiful for that beautiful porcelain doll cracking effect. It was really kudos to you.
But yeah, Evergreen is far and away the best performance. Yeah. And really the major reason I would recommend watching this movie on a very rainy night when you can't go out in October.
Do we want to give, well, I have to say, Helena Bonham Carter.
Queen.
She said, what did she say? It's the way she said, what did she say? She said a lot of things.
I was about to say, there's lots of things that come out of Helena Bonham Carter's mouth in this movie.
I think it's when she first sits down to a meal with Barnabas and he says something or other. And she just turns to Michelle and says, is he for real?
That's what he says. Oh, women doctors, what a time.
She yeah. says, is he for real? I had to rewind that a couple times and just watch that.
Well, she has the same tone in her voice when she sits down and sees him and turns to Michelle and just goes, who the hell is this?
It's giving very big Princess Margaret vibes. If Princess Margaret was in Dark Shadows.
With a very convincing American accent, I must say.
Oh, yeah. She's fabulous, that American accent.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, okay. I hate that, you know, she does what she does and tries to siphon Barnabas's blood into her to become immortal, and he kills her and dumps her at the bottom of the ocean. I didn't love that journey for her, because I just wanted more quips and just her in that wonderful red wig.
Yeah, she's another character that you wish was given more screen time with less plot. I know that's such an odd complaint to say, but she's just so dry and witty.
Just let her do that for the whole movie.
Yeah, just let her sort of be a thorn in everyone's side, but you don't need to give her this actual plot point.
Yeah.
Unless, again, you are legitimately setting up a sequel, because the last shot is you see her opening her eyes, meaning she has actually turned into a vampire.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I don't feel like this is a movie that you could have in good conscience entered into thinking, oh yeah, this is going to get a sequel. We better set this up.
Yeah, it just feels more like a little, it's just going to hit the nostalgia factor a little bit and that's it. It's not going to kindle that flame. I think that's why so many kind of reboots that we've had, especially of like sitcoms, it doesn't seem like they can sustain that bump of nostalgia for a whole season or sequels. You kind of just want one and done, maybe.
Right.
Is there any kind of counter to that? Have there been any other kind of things like this that have been?
Well, I think something like Batman.
Yeah.
But Batman continues. It is a property that has never stopped, if you will. But also Spider-Man. Like, I don't think anyone loved the Andrew Garfield Spider-Mans, but how many of the big three, if you will, Batman, Spider-Man, Superman, have we seen their origin stories told five different times over?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's a very perilous wave to ride, because
it runs out.
Right.
Yeah.
You can use the nostalgia factor to get people hooked in, but you've still got to be telling something new and timely and interesting. You can't just rest on your laurels because people liked it previously, so they must like it again, regardless of quality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Will and Grace reboot. I'm talking to you.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was thinking. I was like, we could have just had a reunion special like Friends or The West Wing and been done with it, you know. Do we want to give any airtime to Johnny Depp?
Not a huge amount. I can't say that it's a bad performance. It's just an uninteresting performance.
It's something he could do in his sleep.
It's nothing new. It's something you've seen him do countless amounts of times and better.
Oh, yeah. What is voice? I mean, he's giving me a Sweeney Todd voice in this.
It
for
is
sure.
100% a Sweeney Todd redo.
I just want to know what was going on.
This was just after Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, wasn't it? But yeah, so he had just done another Pirates movie.
Which that's the other thing he's pulling a lot from. There's it's kind of like if Captain Jack and Sweeney had a really fucked up vampire baby.
Yeah. Then he did The Rum Diary the year before this. And then, yep, and then we have Dark Shadows. So this is kind of getting into his descent, his really falling out of favor in terms of, in any type of way, in terms of audiences and public opinion, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, Alice in Wonderland kind of put that nail in the coffin.
Well, that's the thing. Much like Tim Burton's output, Sweeney Todd is really the last Johnny Depp performance I remember liking.
Yeah.
And certainly the last thing he was in any sort of favorable contention for.
Yeah. But yeah, this was not as, I definitely found him enjoyable in this. It's not bad, but again, we've seen it before.
Yeah, it is a wholly uninteresting performance. But I will give it this. The boat rocks based on who he's in a scene with.
Oh, because sure, yeah,
he gets better when he's with Eva Green and Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah.
And then once again, when he's in those scenes with Bella Heathcote, it is, I have trouble even remembering what is said in those scenes because I am so bored. It's like watching two pieces of cardboard act opposite each other.
Yeah, it's very boring. Is Bella Heathcote a model?
I don't believe so.
Let me see.
I thought she was just one of those people that had a good like 4-year run in the 2010s.
Huh. She did Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, The Neon Demon, 50 Shades Darker. Yeah, I think. Anyway, neither here nor there. So yeah, she hasn't been doing a ton. I thought maybe she was just like a model of the moment. Maybe she was.
Are there any other principles we want to discuss? Johnny Lee Miller doesn't do anything in this movie.
He's a piece of shit character-wise. I'm sure Johnny Lee Miller is lovely in real life.
And yeah, Chloe Grace Moretz is not good, but she's also not given any opportunity to be. It is...
Literally, they just said, play stone, Chloe.
Yeah, it is the most one-note character you can possibly imagine, and unbearable to boot. Like, the only moment of hers that I even somewhat enjoyed was only because of Johnny Depp, which is when he first arrives and she says, are you stoned? And his response is, they tried stoning me, my dear. It didn't work.
Luckily, she gets much better as she's growing older. It's all good. But yeah, she got one note and she just went with it, and man, it didn't do her any favors.
Aside from everything else, at least we've got the usual suspects there, like Colleen Atwood, Danny Elfman.
Yes.
Who am I trying to, the production, Heinrichs. Rick Heinrichs for the production design, which is gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at least the design elements are there. It is a very, if it's not interesting for the entire movie, it's at least pretty to watch. It's a Tim Burton movie. Nine times out of ten, you're going to have something fun visually.
And the 10th time is Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah. Do you have anything else about the movie?
No, I think we've really... I think maybe it was the hair. Well, who did Michelle remind you of in this movie? Is she giving you a vibe? Any actor? I felt like she was giving maybe a Julie Christie vibe. I feel like Julie Christie's had that hair. Maybe in shampoo.
It is Julie Christie hair. That's not Julie Christie hair in shampoo.
I can't remember. I think shampoo, I'm thinking of Goldie Hawn hair.
She is blown out in a bob to be damned.
I think I'm thinking of Goldie Hawn hair in that.
That's much closer.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
But yeah, her Colleen Atwood would really snap with her hair and her dress in that party scene.
Oh yeah, that the clothes they put Michelle in and the amount of costume changes she has is sort of on par with her hairspray. looks.
Yeah.
They're not as glitzy, but they are just 70s kitschy perfection.
Just divine.
Yeah.
Oh, another thing, we never really found out. I mean, I imagine that Michelle was married and Chloe's and Carolyn's father is not in the picture. What happened?
I assume that we would have found out in the sequel.
Guess so, but I'm like, why give them a new last name? Never mention it.
Or it's very possible that we find out what happened to her husband in the series. That could have been one of those nostalgia factors that just didn't get
pulled in. Okay. Maybe.
Because that is one thing I fully admit. I only have the movie to draw from because I did not watch the show clearly because I was not born. So I don't have a lot of comparison between this and the show. I really just have to look at the movie as a standalone beast, which I feel like quite a few people probably had to do in 2012, which is why it probably didn't succeed on almost any front, because the people that had never seen the movie are going in blind to a Tim Burton movie, probably just looking for entertainment, which unfortunately this doesn't provide across the board. And then you have the people that went in with the nostalgia factor, and from all accounts, this is not, aside from character names, not a very good representation of what the show was. So you have those people disappointed as well. And so you just, it just feels like sort of a lose-lose situation for whatever your experience with the TV show was.
Yeah. Doesn't seem like it has the TV show does not have the impact of, or a name recognition like a Twilight Zone or like an Addams Family, any of these kind of huge shows that are kind of under the horror thriller umbrella. That, because I'd never heard of the TV show Dark Shadows before this movie.
Also, it feels like the TV show did go through quite a few mutations and had a lot of different characters over the years, and did, like the movie does, throw in at different points ghosts and werewolves and vampires and sort of all these horror tropes over the course of the show, which is great. It was on for 6 seasons. Why would you not? You can't do that in a movie.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Look at the Addams Family movies and how well those work. Yeah. Because you have set characters.
You kind of have the family established already.
Right. So you just have to move those in and tell a new story.
Yeah.
Same thing for something as silly as the Brady Bunch movie, which again is sort of a fish out of water narrative as well. You take the Brady Bunch and put them in the 1990s acting like they would, but again, new story. And so I think you have a lot of examples of how this transition works, but because this was a relatively niche show that didn't quite have a set group of 6 characters, or really the only one that seems to have had a lasting impression in pop culture is Barnabas, which is the whole reason this film got made, is it got optioned because Johnny Depp, you know, had always dreamed of playing this role and then brought Tim Burton on because Tim Burton also loved the TV show. And then this is one of the few times, Michelle was saying in an interview at Comic-Con, one of the only times she has ever called a director to advocate to be in a project. She loved the TV show. And so when she heard that Tim Burton was directing it, a friend of hers who she was working on at the time said, just call him. Just say you love the show and want to be in the movie.
Yeah, you're a Catwoman, sister.
Right.
You give him a call.
You have an established relationship with him. Call him and be in the movie.
Yeah.
So you have the 3 sort of biggest names in this movie all having a deep affection for the show, which is also why it's so interesting that Tim Burton seems like, for a lot of his projects, they're very reverential, especially if they're based on other things or if they have a deep meaning to him. And so that's why it really does strike me as so odd that his his narrative for this movie is so skewed, because it just feels like something that he would have known how he wanted to proceed on it, rather than having it be this.
Yes, for sure. Because so many, even something like, of course, there's such deep reverence in Sweeney Todd. Yeah, even in, there's just something, there's just, even if I've heard, there's just a deep love for the stories he's had, like with Edward Scissorhands, you know, with all of his animated features.
Big Fish.
Yes. Even like Sleepy Hollow, I feel it was so in love with that kind of story and that myth, that legend.
Yeah.
Yeah, this doesn't feel like that same love is pulsing underneath. Something's kind of missing. There's maybe just a love for his coworkers, maybe. There's maybe that, but that same kind of passion isn't there. I would agree with you.
It's kind of a little bit of a letdown, especially for these watching purposes, which is sort of watching with a focus on Michelle's performance. It's
yeah, for sure. There's going to be a few.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting, her 2012 projects being this and then People Like Us, which could not be more different.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know how much more I have to say about the movie itself. Yeah,
I think I'm good.
Yeah. There were no major awards nominations. Chloe Grace Moretz got nominated for a Saturn Award for Best Youth Performance. And then it got a Saturn Award for Production Design, which
rightly so
deserved. And then the little kid that played Danny was nominated for the Best Young Actor Award, which I just like we said in previous episodes, I do love the random, just yeah, that kid did good. He's up for the Best Young
Actor. That kid was in a movie.
Yeah, I always like that. So I giggled a little bit when I saw that he got that random youth nomination.
I was checking to see, I was like, now why wasn't Colleen Atwood in it given any attention to this movie? It's because she did Snow White and the Huntsman this year too.
That has not stopped Colleen Atwood from getting two nominations in one year.
That's true, but yeah. I guess that's the one they wanted to give it to her for more.
That one makes sense to me, because as much as I think she does bring that really fun, kitschy sensibility to the costumes, that's another thing where just because of the tone of the movie, they're not really allowed to be as outlandish as they might be, which may have made them stand out more for everyone across the board rather than just Michelle's costumes.
Yeah.
You know, you have some very pretty, well, not even costumes. You have a very pretty period gown for Josette in the opening.
Mm-hmm.
But for things like basically everybody in present day that is not Helena Bonham Carter, Michelle Pfeiffer, Eva Green, and Johnny Depp, they're pretty just standard everyday wear.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that that's not work, because they're certainly period appropriate. They don't stand out as anachronistic in any way, but it doesn't stand up against something like Snow White and the Huntsman.
Yeah.
So I believe that brings us to our ever-present question. Do we recommend this movie?
I think if you stan Eva Green like we do, you must see it for her. If I say the word Eva, if I say the name Eva Green and you don't know who that is, one, we aren't friends. Then also two, then yeah, I think you can probably just pass this along and just skip it. I think unless we were doing this podcast, I would never have seen this.
And that's a fair assessment. I don't think I would recommend this to people.
No.
Again, Eva Green is the reason why I would, but unless you are doing a completist run for Michelle Pfeiffer, as we are, unless you're doing like a complete Tim Burton retrospective and you are required to watch this movie
and you can't pick and choose,
then yeah, I don't think your life is going to be altered by skipping this one. And then our other question, how do we feel about Michelle in this movie? And I guess I should say that if you would like a much deeper rundown into Best Supporting Actress of 2012, please look at our episode on People Like Us, where we go into a very deep dive on the supporting actresses of 2012, right, which is where I can only assume Michelle would have been campaigned. It's not a performance I would nominate her for, not her fault, but that's where we stand.
Yeah. Let me see. I'm looking at my ranking right now. I have this pretty low.
That doesn't surprise
just
me.
Just because I even have it before something like The Story of Us. I have it after something like The Story of Us. I think even in that, she gets more to work with, even if it's not great. Then this, I just was really disappointed by how she was left so high and dry.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't even really recommend this for Michelle purposes. If you were interested in seeing a film of hers, I would not recommend this.
That's probably why I was so disappointed in this movie when I saw it, is because I remembered the trailer pushing a lot of her facial antics hard.
Hmm.
And it really felt like it was clearly a Johnny Depp movie, but that Michelle Pfeiffer was primary in it. And then you watch it and you're just like, that was a trap. I was tricked.
Shame on you, Tim Burton. You had me fooled.
Because she does well with. Like I said, I can find reasons to defend this performance for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
It's not what you would want it to be. No. And I really would love to see, what she could have done with an actual supporting role. Something that had an actual impact on the plot itself.
Instead of just saying, as her house burns down, we'll endure. Like, give me a break.
Right. She gets kind of like the last hurrah line of this movie. And it's just like, oh, okay. It's just, it is not the showcase you wish it were for her, especially knowing that she asked to be in this movie. Do better by her, people.
Yes. Yes. So is it time for us to move on to the glorious finale of our episodes, 6 Degrees of Michelle Pfeiffer?
I believe it is.
Alrighty. I think I gave first last time.
I think you need to tell us what this little game is before start throwing giving and receivings around.
Yes, sir. So 6 Degrees of Separation, 6 Degrees of Michelle Pfeiffer, excuse me, is the game we play at the end of each episode, where we each give each other the name of an actor or an actress, and we connect them to Michelle's filmography in 6 people or less.
Did you give last time, Michael?
Why, yes, Jerry. As a matter of fact, I think I did.
I heard that somewhere. I guess that means I'm giving first this episode.
I believe that's so.
Okay. I tried to go through just TV people.
Ooh, okay.
And I looked at my shelf and saw one of my favorite shows from when I was a kid, which was Fairy Tale Theater. So I am giving you Shelley Duvall.
Oh, well, so Shelley Duvall was in The Shining with Jack Nicholson, who was in The Witches of Eastwick with Michelle.
I knew I could have found a harder one, but I didn't even connect them like I usually do in my head, because I had already gone through a lot of names where I was just like, this is too easy. Shelley Duvall. We'll go with Shelley.
So the mine for you is a bit of a little bit more on the Scream Queenie spooky route. I'm giving you Jamie Lee Curtis.
So Jamie Lee Curtis is in A Fish Called Wanda with Kevin Klein, who is in A Midsummer Night's Dream with Michelle Pfeiffer.
That's where I went to.
Look at us being quick.
I know, at this point, at number 46.
We know now. We know our one-offs.
It's
now.
Really getting like, because I even thought, what did I think of today as I was watching? I was watching some Ted Lasso earlier today. and Juno Temple is in that show. I was like, oh, Juno Temple, have we done her yet on Six Degrees? And I was like, oh no, wait, she was in that little Maleficent movie. She's one of those fairies. Can't do her.
She sure is.
She's all Thistle Twit.
Stupid names. I will never forgive them for that.
Alrighty, so if that's 6 degrees, quickest 6 degrees of things we've had in a while, usually I'm just sitting here like,
I think that's the fastest 6 degrees we've had yet. Which, oh, I mean, as you said, we're starting our last 5 episodes, so we better know our shit by this point. Otherwise, what have we learned?
So what are we still doing playing this game? Can't we give up already? So, Pfeiffer fans, this has been another episode of Pfeiffer Fridays. I am Michael McLean, and you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd at Michael D. McLean.
And I am Jerry Downey, and you can follow me on Twitter and Letterboxd at JerryDowney913.
Please remember to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Makes us easier to find so we can continue to spread the Michelle gospel. You can also find updates about the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at Pfeiffer Fridays. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you again next week for Pfeiffer Fridays.
Do you know he admitted killing those men at the construction site? He's a murderer!
He's a Collins and a good man, and these days that's a desperately rare combination.
Oh, yes, I almost forgot. The family, they can do no wrong.
You know, Julia, I'm surprised at you. I think a physician like you would find him fascinating.
Well, sure. Medically, psychologically, and physically, he's fascinating. Which is exactly why I came to you instead of the police.
Then be fascinated, Julia. And if you have an ounce of love or respect for this family, keep your mouth shut.